Hi, everyone. Welcome to Televisions, the podcast, an audio companion to the Televisions website and a show made by Anglophiles for Anglophiles. I'm Lacey Bogger-Milas, and I almost said that like it was my normal name and not something I've been trying to teach myself to say for 3 weeks. And I am the editor here at Televisions, and joining me as always is my co-host and partner in critiquing, if that is a kind way to put it, Sani Bundle.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm fine. I can't believe 2020 is... I mean, I can believe that 2020 is almost over. Also, I'm like, really?
Less than 90 days until it's March again.
You shut your mouth. You know what? Maybe I'll be okay with March in 2021 if it doesn't last for 637 days like the last one did. But I guess we'll see. I don't know. It's a weird time. The year is winding down. Shows are sort of going on holiday breaks. Seasons are ending. Series are ending, which is sort of how we are on our current topic today. I kind of love like the sort of drunk with power feeling of this. Like, we can talk about whatever we want because stuff is not on. So if this is not to your taste, you can skip it. But please don't, because it'll be fun.
So what are we talking about today?
We are talking about a show that I have loved on several other sort of not topic specific podcasts, but I'm like, it's ending and it's time to talk about it. Also, because I make the rules here. Not really, but sort of. And that is the Starz period drama, The Spanish Princess.
So the thing about The Spanish Princess is that this is a series that like I had kept meaning to watch and then never got around to. Like, so basically The White Queen was the first one of these. And it was actually
all of these are based on novels by an author named Philippa Gregory, who has at least a dozen. She has a new series of books out now that aren't related to Tudor England, but she has like at least a dozen books in a series about like the women of Tudor England.
Yeah. And basically, this was first put into development in the wake of the success of Game of Thrones. And for people who aren't all that familiar with Game of Thrones, the novels that show was based on, A Song of Ice and Fire, were inspired by, and the characters are extremely loosely based on, The War of the Roses.
It's true. Sansa Stark is the White Princess.
Yeah. So when we start with The White Queen, it is actually the BBC deciding, well, since The War of the Roses is popular right now, why don't we do a different adaptation of The War of the Roses, one that's from a female perspective. They had also at that point just, I believe this is right around the time that Outlander debuted, and so Starz had kind of was doing this sort of pivot towards female, you know, women's programming.
And to be fair, they're like still doing it.
Oh yes, absolutely.
Technically, the Spanish Princess is sort of the end cap to this particular like trilogy of shows. It was The White Queen, The White Princess, and now The Spanish Princess. And if I were like a billionaire with a bunch of money to spend, I would ask Emma Frost to just make the rest of Philippa Gregory's books into shows, but I don't have Jeff Bezos money, so I can't do that. Yeah. But like they have already greenlit another Tudor drama called Becoming Elizabeth that they just finished casting. So, or at least they just cast some of the lead roles for, and they have greenlit they're calling like Extraordinary Women of History is sort of like the umbrella that some of this stuff is going to go under, and they have greenlit a series based on the life of Eleanor of Aquitaine, which I think is very, very fascinating.
That's actually really interesting. One of the things about like, okay, well, first of all, The White Queen and The White Princess are very different from most of these retellings of The War of the Roses because it tells it completely from a female perspective, which is just something you don't get. Like, the fact of the matter is that there are tons of retellings of The War of the Roses. And, you know, starting with Shakespeare's The Hollow Crown, you know, up into Netflix's the recent The King, this whole from Henry IV through, you know, Richard III or Henry VII, it's sort of this whole... This is a period of history that gets covered a lot, you know, and one
it's
of the things
very complicated.
Yeah. And one of the things about, you know, British history, because we get a lot of British history shows, is that there's sort of sections that do get covered and sections that don't get covered. So like we have like the mythos of King Arthur, and then we sort of you know, we sort of skip a bit. We don't really talk about like 1066. We don't talk about like, you know, we do sometimes Richard the Lionhearted a little bit, you know, the Lion in Winter kind of stuff. But mostly like we sort of skip ahead to like the early 1400s.
People love the Tudors.
Yeah, the people really do. They love this whole, they, I mean, it, the Lancasters versus the Yorks. It's high drama. It's, you know, it's a fascinating point in history.
Because they're not just on opposite sides. They're all family too. So it's very like backstabby and dramatic and
usually though
it focuses on like Richard III and stuff and the men in the story and not necessarily the ladies in it, which is a good correction that these do, even though, you know, some of it's not really historically accurate, but what is in the genre?
Yeah. So The White Queen, which was made by the BBC and brought over here by Starz, is very much set in the center of the War of the Roses fights. And is very much if you know the War of the Roses story, if you've watched the Shakespeare's The Hollow Crown, you will know basically all of these. You will know all these beats. You're just seeing them from a completely different perspective. The White Princess, basically the BBC made The White Queen, and then I hate to compare it to Sanditon, but basically before it even finished airing in the United States, before they really saw what the numbers were for over here, they decided that it was too expensive and they couldn't continue it, so it was canceled. And Starz was sort of left holding the bag going, well, do we keep doing this? You know, we do have a decent audience for this. And so they decided to do that. But rather than make like The White Queen season two, what they decided to do was to sort of split it away completely and call it a new series, call it The White Princess, basically recast the whole thing under the excuse that, well, basically all these people have aged up anyway. I think there's like one actress who like crosses over from the White Queen to the White Princess.
There is, but she doesn't play the same role.
Oh, she don't? Wow. Okay, yeah. Like, I knew it was something like that.
But like, and all the characters cross over. So, I mean, it's really like, it is not as jarring as I feared at the time. Plus, the Jodie Comer plays Elizabeth of York, and she is incredible. So,
yeah, I actually went back. I had only ever watched the first episode of The White Queen and the first episode of The White Princess, and I went back and I actually watched the last episode of The White Queen into the first episode of The White Princess, and the last episode of The White Princess into the first episode of The Spanish Princess, just to sort of see how they flow. And I was really surprised at how seamless it does feel, because I think partly because there was also like a decent sized break of a couple of years between each one.
Well, and the creative team behind all three is the same.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, like, I honestly, like, there was a big break between The White Queen and The White Princess since production basically moved from, like, one channel to another. And then there was a pretty decent break between The White Princess and The Spanish Princess as well. So I'd never really realized how seamless these three shows really do feel, even though they have different titles and they are sort of standalones, but also sequels. But the thing about The Spanish Princess, and I started this and I sort of distracted myself. The reason that I find The Spanish Princess so fascinating is because it delves into one of these periods that we skip. Usually we do like the War of the Roses up through, and then Elizabeth of York and Henry VII married and they managed to make it work. And then Henry VIII got divorced.
It's true.
And when we come into Henry VIII, we always start with Catherine of Aragorn as this old lady who he's already put aside and who is,
she's kind of overweight. She's frumpy. She's like into the point in her life when like all she has is God. So she's like extremely religious. And I mean, she was extremely religious her whole life, but...
Yeah, and then Anne Boleyn appears as this, like, breath of fresh air, or in, you know, some of the other versions, you know, the scheming, you know, woman who wants to sleep with the king, but won't in order to force him into marriage.
I honestly, like, I know that we probably don't need another show about Anne Boleyn, but I love Anne Boleyn, and I would love to see... sort of like, if I had Jeff Bezos money again, I would ask Emma Frost to do an Anne Boleyn series, because I would love to see her an Anne Boleyn series and also a Mary Tudor series, because I love the way she handles Mary in The Spanish Princess. But I feel like, to your point, Anne Boleyn tends to get shoved into like certain boxes that nobody lets her out of. And I would really like to see a version that maybe explores the fact that maybe she wasn't like a scheming trying to like take the crown from a lady she technically like worked for. Maybe she was just shoved into this position by the men around her who treated her like an object. She was really smart. She was super like well read. She was super intelligent. She was such an interesting person in her own right, and a big reason that the Reformation came to England, outside of the fact that Henry got divorced for her. But like, we don't talk about that part of her story either. It's always just the, like, she's a seductress and then she got her head cut off. And yeah. That is, I think, a good reason. This show does. And I say this as I say all that to lead up to my next statement, which is I am like an Anne Boleyn person. Like when I went to see Six, the musical, which is a musical about Henry VIII's six wives. It is great. If theater, whenever theater gets back, like, go see it. But I bought the tote bag. I bought the Anne Boleyn tote bag because I am like an Anne Boleyn person. But this show has really made me reconsider the way that I feel and view Catherine of Aragon, because I think we do her dirty in the way that we don't look at the way she was really a groundbreaking figure and did a lot of good for England and for Henry. She was his wife for 25 years before all of that other stuff started happening.
Yeah. And honestly, like this, as I said, this is a period of history we skip. I will admit this is a period I actually don't know a lot about, you know, because it's something I know. But like for me, this was sort of a revelation of who Catherine of Aragon was. All the things we sort of take for granted, like, you know, in A Man for All Seasons with Thomas More, or like or Cardinal Wolsey standing against Henry VIII and refusing him a divorce, like all of these sorts of things, like these are sort of things that we take for granted. And one of the things about the Spanish Princess is that in over the course of the 16 episodes, two seasons, is that it really sort of drives how these people got to where they were. Like, I really felt like at the end of The Spanish Princess that I understood why Catherine of Aragon is always portrayed as this, you know, religious nut, basically. Because
she finally puts the outfit on.
Oh my gosh, she finally puts the outfit on. So we're gonna back up a little bit. One of my favorite moments. So we have this whole romance with Thomas More and Margaret Pohl throughout, like the second season of The Spanish Princess, and I was just like, I'm really supposed to be looking at Thomas More as a romantic hero? Like, you know, I understand that he was
that part was probably like not true, but
here you are painting him as a romantic hero, and you know, one of the last things that I've seen in this is Wolf Hall, where he is like this deranged dude who had torture instruments in his basement. And then finally you get to the episode where like Margaret finds the torture instruments in his basement. I was like, there we go, there's the Thomas More I know.
I mean, it's true.
Yeah.
But the thing that I think is really interesting about the way that they let you see these people in new lights is to your point, like, but like, you know, they're more than the one thing that we remember them for.
Yes.
And I think it's important to, when we look at history, to, you know, that, what is that old saying? Like, history is written by the winners.
Yes.
Which is true. Like which is true, obviously. But in this sense, I mean, like, history is written by the men. Mm. So, especially like for this chunk of history, like history is written by dudes. So why would they give any of these women their due for any positive impact they had on anything? Or why would they even have a sympathetic view of anything that they did? One of the things I love the most about this show is that it really treated, you always hear about, oh, Catherine of Aragon just couldn't have a boy, and like all of history could have been different if she just managed to have a son, and there's a lot of sort of like reflective blame there on her for that. Like, it's her fault she couldn't do it. And I feel like this show really gives you a competing perspective of, look how hard this was for her. Look how difficult these years she had, at least some, anywhere between, also like the records from this period are not great, and no one cares about babies women didn't have, but she had anywhere from 6 to 10. She had anywhere from six to 10 children. Only two of them lived past birth.
Jesus.
Only one of them lived to adulthood. Like, just and imagine, you know, how short like your fertility window was back then. When Catherine of Aragon died, she was only 50 years old, and she had like her body ravaged by, she was pregnant like constantly.
And that, you know, and that's a thing we don't consider. And the show sort of makes a very good point of how these men totally don't see how hard she's working, and how when Henry sort of starts blaming her at all points, like it's not like she's not trying here. She's pregnant all the time. And like, and then, you know, when she does, like when she and that anything she does that's positive gets spun into a negative, because whatever good she's doing, it doesn't matter because she hasn't had a boy. Right. Like when the whole leading of the army to Scotland,
which, by the way, that really did happen.
Did she have maternity armor? Because I need to know.
No, she did not have maternity armor. That really did happen, though. She did ride north with the army. She did like help come up with battles and strategies. She was not on the field at Flodden. She was probably in like a castle nearby. I don't think she'd actually gotten all the way to Flodden yet, but she really did. She really was pregnant. She really did go north to sort of manage the army with the Duke of Norfolk, and she, to the best of anyone's knowledge, she probably did have a miscarriage shortly thereafter.
Yeah, and suddenly the fact that she basically saved England's butt doesn't matter anymore because she had a miscarriage.
And yeah, like, and she actually had a much greater like military victory than Henry did, who went to France and like drank and basically like sacked a town. Like, not even really sacked a town. I think everybody, like, ran away. But what I like, her victory was clearly, like, of an order of magnitude greater than his. But, like, everybody had to be like, Henry has conquered France. And they're like, I guess, like, all so, like, the Scottish king died because of what happened. And she was really, like, supposedly very, like, obsessed with, like, sending his body to Henry. Like, the part where they make it look like she is being kind to Meg is a little bit of a fiction. She only really got to set. She sent Henry his jacket, I think, with like his blood on it. But she was really like aggressive about trying to send his body, about trying to take King James's body out of Scotland. She was really bloody.
I find this very fascinating because, you know, the other thing is that we don't just get her story, though her story does dominate. We get the story of Queen Margaret as well. We get story.
And it's actually like an order of magnitude more crazy than they show on the show.
And we also get like, you know, Mary getting sent to France and marrying and having to marry King Louis. And like, and there's the other thing is that there's this whole, you know, one of the things that I never appreciated is that the politics of Henry overruling her choices comes back to bite him when he finally does want this divorce, because if he'd made nice to Charles that whole time, mm-hmm. and instead he basically, you know, disregards everything she wants. He treats Charles as if he's an enemy, and then suddenly he's turning around going, I would really like a divorce, and you expect Charles and suddenly he expects Charles to say yes.
I don't know that Charles ever would have said yes, because Catherine was his aunt.
That's true.
So but yeah, it's not helping.
Yeah, you really get a sense of how many choices went into creating the situation that we always sort of take for granted was what it was when we get there. When it comes to, you know, when it comes to Anne Boleyn. And oh, by the way, I didn't say this earlier, but Anne Boleyn to me has always been a cautionary tale of not waiting until marriage, because, you know. And I would just really love, like, if the Spanish princess really did continue and do an Anne Boleyn show, I would absolutely want that perspective to be part of it.
I mean, wow.
Am I wrong?
I also just think that Anne Boleyn is one of those figures that gets demonized much in the same way that Catherine does for things that are just not her fault.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like,
It's just very, and to an extent, that's what always happens to women in history, because women are not the ones who wrote it down. So,
and I have to say, Charlotte Hope does an amazing job.
She's
with
incredible.
This. One of the things about this is because, you know, in the earlier version, in the earlier shows, from the White Queen to the White Princess, you know, all of these characters basically get recast. So, you know, we have Rebecca Ferguson as Elizabeth Woodville in the White Queen, and then it's Essie Davis in the next one. I think Margaret Beaufort is played by, who's Margaret Beaufort in the early one? Amanda Hale, that's right. And then she turns into Michelle Farrelly from Game of Thrones. And then
turns into Harriet Walter.
I know, at the beginning of Spanish Princess. Like, it's
your girl.
Mm-hmm. Like, I love that recasting. This is one of the few where we actually have the character age up and they don't recast in this way, because the Spanish Princess was a two-parter instead of the Spanish Princess and then another show that they called something else. And I really got a sense of, especially watching like the two seasons sort of together, instead of waiting a year, is that I really got the sense of how young she's playing it when she first gets there in those early episodes, and then how old she feels as she's leaving with Mary to get away from Henry, because he's basically going to try to divorce her, and she, you know, needs to make the decision on her own to leave.
That is not what happened, but I actually love, that's not, hold on, let me back up. What really happened towards the end of Catherine's life, her sort of being pushed out of court, being pushed out of her marriage, it happened over a period of many years. Like there was, you know, but they sort of hint at this a little bit when Henry's talking to Wolsey about, you know, I need this done, and in like the sideline, and then never address it directly. But like Wolsey was trying to negotiate with the Vatican to like get an annulment, and it was I believe it was referred to back then as like the King's Great Matter. I'm making air quotes, but this was a long process with a lot of starts and stops. At one point, like, the Pope was sort of held hostage by the Holy Roman Emperor. There was like a, and they were like, well, I guess he's not going to rule against her, his aunt, while he's like being trapped in his castle. And there was a very like elaborate sort of public trial at Blackfriars that was supposed to sort of prove that Catherine was, you know, married to Arthur. And like Catherine like walked in and made a statement and like walked out, and was really just like a boss move. But like, so this was just like, and then eventually like, Henry and Anne were going on, and he was, you know, sort of slighting her publicly, and everybody knew that they weren't, you know, still having marital relations, and she was basically like pushed further and further out of the court's orbit to sort of like further away castles. And the castle she died in was sort of like out in the fens. It was very remote. She was pretty much like alone.
But it wasn't her choice to go there. This was
no. It was and Henry very cruelly would not let her see Mary. He held Mary out as sort of like a stick to try to get her to agree to the divorce. And like Catherine went through all of these things, and she never admitted. She went to her grave insisting that she had never, you know, that she was Henry's true wife and the true queen of England. And she never did anything that sort of towards the end of her life, as I understand it, she was most focused on like protecting Mary and protecting Mary's rights and protecting Mary's legitimacy as an heir to the throne. And so she went years without seeing her daughter because Henry wouldn't let her. And she did it so that
Mary could be queen,
that Mary would stay legitimate. So while I love the sort of, This is a thing with these shows, I think, in that they don't always get like the history parts right, but they get kind of the spirit of things right. Mm. And I'm okay with this ending, even though I know that Catherine didn't get to go off and raise her daughter and like worship her God the way she probably deserved to. But I do think it got the spirit of like her devotion to Mary at the end of her life correct. So I'm okay with it. And also just because I never quite knew where I thought the show should end anyway, because there isn't like a happy stopping point for them. And this is, I think, as close as you can get while still having that like bittersweet foreknowledge of the fact that for all that Catherine gets the last word, which I actually love. She literally she gets the last word with Henry, and she gets to choose her own fate, and she gets to like raise her daughter. Like, probably none of that happened, but I feel like it still was a good place to end it, with the sort of bittersweet foreknowledge that it's all like not gonna, like, this is a nice snapshot moment, but it's all gonna go to crap.
I also have to say, I really liked O'Connor's portrayal of Henry.
No, I hated him so much.
Really, do you?
No, I love him as an actor. I hated Henry so much. Like, I hate Henry the Eighth generally, but like, he made me just really hate him. And I'm like, you're a great actor, kid. Because I hate his Henry. Like, hate.
That's really funny. I could see why they made him a romantic hero in the first season. And I found that to be fascinating because so many of these characters were in places that I didn't expect them to be. Like, I never really thought of Henry VIII as a romantic hero kind of character.
No, apparently when Henry was young, he was like a hottie.
Like, I knew that intellectually. Like, I remember people saying that.
You could sort of see that, like, this is why he, like, gets all the ladies. But, because, again, to your point before, like, the way we remember Henry VIII is when he's, like, kind of gotten fat. He's very, like, grrr.
I did scream when he finally shows up in the beard. I think it's the second to last episode when he finally gets the beard. And I screamed.
No, I screamed when, like, Meg comes to visit at some point, and she's like, you've gotten fat. And I was like, yes! I mean, it was sort of like it was a Jonathan Rhys Meyers and the Tudors who, like, refused to put a fat suit on, and yes. I was like, has he really gotten fat? But I, like, loved it as a joke.
Yeah. Because the fact is that they don't actually, like, build him up. It's not like, one of the things about, like the Henry VIII that we saw in Wolf Hall, which is, I've forgotten the actor's name off the top of my head, oh my gosh.
Oh, it's Damian Lewis.
Thank you, Damian Lewis. Damian Lewis, like, the way that they built out his costume, like, it's a thin actor, but you can see, like, how easily he could bulk up when he started eating. Like, you could just see it in the way that they dress him and in the way he holds himself. Whereas here, like, you don't actually see it. But yet when the beard came out, I was like, yeah, OK, now we're getting into older, ugly Harry.
Which technically this is, I'm such, like, the person I hate. And I'm like, technically this is a little early for that. But again, I get the spirit of it. Like, he's becoming an uglier person on the inside and the outside.
Yeah.
That beard was really ratty and gross, though.
Yeah, it really was. I also found, as I said, like, Wolsey being presented as, like, this kind of romantic character. I also was fascinated by the fact that
Wolsey or Moore?
Moore is the romantic character. Wolsey, I found fascinating as he's this evil character when I think of him as the person who defended Catherine until the last.
Oh, no, that's not true.
Yeah, like, I've always thought of him as being the one who was in Catherine's corner because he refuses to give Henry the divorce. And so seeing him as her enemy for, like, 98% of the show was really fascinating.
I think that I hate Wolsey. I hate, like, virtually every version of Wolsey.
And, even Jonathan Pryce?
Yeah, it's just he's a bad person. And I think, just for everybody who doesn't know this, he does eventually get his comeuppance. It's just that it's Anne Boleyn that delivers it. The show, I think, hints a little bit at this with the sort of dichotomy of how much, like, the nobles dislike him because he is of low birth.
Mm.
And he is the son of a butcher from Ipswich, I think.
Yes.
And he has, you know, I think, like, one of the things, the church was very popular for second sons and poor men who wanted to rise above their station, Alexander Hamilton style. And Wolsey is very clearly, like, an Alexander Hamilton style. Like, he moves up in the church very quickly. But part of that is because he gets Henry's ear, and Henry, you know, the show doesn't always do a great job about delineating the passage of time, because there's one episode where it looks like he's made, like, a cardinal and then, like, Archbishop of York, like, 5 minutes later.
Right. And then suddenly he's wearing the red outfit, like, in the next episode. And you're like, woo, where did that come from? Yeah.
Yeah. It's, like, really rushed. But, like, a lot of that did happen because of Henry. Wolsey, I know, was sort of stuck in the middle between Rome and Henry. But as you can see over the course of this show, Henry will behead you if you don't do what he wants. So I guess that's a little...
Can I also say, like, oh my God, some of the violence in this show, like, really sort of surprised me. When I watched the first couple episodes of The White Queen and then sort of abandoned it, and then the first couple of episodes of White Prince and then sort of abandoned it, like, I don't think I ever really understood how violent these shows were. Like,
do
get some, like, some of that in those two series, but, like, the first beheading, they actually have a shot down on the neck where you see, yeah, like, the vertebrae.
And, like, the blood, and the blood is, like, gushing out like a fountain.
Yeah,
so,
like,
nasty.
It is, oh, whoa. Like, that really threw me a little bit the first time I sort of encountered that with this show. And it sort of...
Be very glad they didn't get to Margaret Pole's execution, which is incredibly gory.
Yeah, you know, I also find the fact that, like, I know these things about the characters and that we aren't ever going to get to them. Like, you know that Margaret Pohl eventually gets, you know, executed. And I've always thought of Margaret Pohl as a terrible person. And so, you know, having, I forget who plays her, the White Princess off the top of my head, but she looks enough like Laura Carmichael to be like, yeah. to really appreciate that casting up. Like, that was real. That's a, Rebecca Benson. That's who plays her in The White Princess.
Oh, I loved her. She was so good.
And then she turns into Laura Carmichael in The Spanish Princess. And, like, you know, in both cases, you really feel like intensely sympathetic to her. And she's really sort of this sympathetic heroine. I mean, even she actually starts off The Spanish Princess with the first voiceover, which, you know, I found that very jarring, because, you know, I think of that. I think of her as a terrible person who eventually was killed. And here we are.
You know what's weird is I've always thought of her as a very sympathetic figure because of the horrible way that she died. And the fact that she's not a saint, but she's been, like, sort of level below a saint in the Catholic Church. She's martyred.
I did not know that. Okay.
Like, she's basically, like, her death is considered, she's not like Saint Margaret Pohl. I have to look it up. She's something like a rung down from that. And Thomas More is a saint. So here I am with your religious facts. But I've always read her very sympathetically, especially because I actually would have been curious to see how they fit this into the show. She was Mary Tudor's governess for like 15 or 20 years. She, like, a long time. And she loved her so much that at some point she offered to, like, do it for free, to, like, pay for her own upkeep so that she could stay Mary's governess. And yeah, I don't know. That's one bit of, like, I know too much of the history, because it's like, this is really jarring me with the way that they leave that character. But it was great drama. I was so pissed at her.
I also really appreciated one of the other things that I don't think I'd ever really quite put together. You know, we have Christopher Columbus sailed the ocean blue, etc., blah, blah, blah. I never really quite put together that he was someone who Catherine of Aragorn would have known and been friends with, even though I knew perfectly well that she was the daughter of Ferdinand and Isabel. Like, I just never actually added those two puzzle pieces together until this show.
I do. They do it more in the first season than the second season, because sort of, like, obviously Catherine's direct connection to her mother dissipates a bit after she's dead. But I do like that you get a little bit of a glimpse of the way that sort of, like, reigning in Spain, not just mainly on the plane, is different than like being a ruler in England, and the different ways that Isabella is allowed to be in charge and to be an equal and to be a warrior in her own right, versus sort of how much Catherine is not allowed to do that and punished for the one time that she does do it.
Yeah, I also have to say I absolutely love, like, all of the, I almost wish that the show gave us more Spain in the second season, because, oh my God, some of those vistas that you get in the very,
it's beautiful.
Though I will say that I was like, and that's where they filmed this in Game of Thrones, and that's where they filmed this in Game of Thrones, because I am an annoying person that way.
That's okay. I'm annoying on different, I'm annoying in the sense that I'm like, that's not, you know, I get pedantic about certain aspects of this, just because, like, this is a time period that I know a lot of the history of. But it's interesting to me that unlike some shows, that it really puts me off for, like, how much I know about something historically versus how it's presented on screen. Like, it doesn't, like, I know enough of this to tell you, like, oh, that's wrong, or that's, like, not entirely true to the history of it, but it doesn't bug me nearly as much as it does in some other shows. And I think it goes back to what I was saying before, but I feel like the aim of this show is to get, like, to sort of do right by Catherine and get the spirit of Catherine correct. And I feel like it does that. And somehow that is enough for me to not be but so annoyed about some of the, like, I don't think Lady Pohl betrayed her. I don't think Henry ever found out for sure, even though I'm sure he suspected, as everybody probably did. But anyway, yeah, I don't know. It's weird.
Well, I honestly, that though, you know, the scene by the water towards the end, when Henry confronts her and she basically confesses without actually confessing, like, I found that scene to be really powerful, despite like the fact that I knew that this is not a thing that probably ever really happened.
No, it did
especially
not.
Because, you know, one of the other things is that one of the things about the White Queen and the White Prince is that it sort of put me off a little bit, especially with the White Queen, is that they have this whole there's magic.
Oh yeah,
right. And like that, you know, I get
it. Because the Woodville women are like river witches. Is
yeah,
that what it is?
Yeah, yeah. The and you get what is her name? Joanna.
Oh.
Janet Teer as Jaquetta doing the thing with, you know, pick a string kind of stuff.
Yeah,
and like
that's in the books.
I'm sure it is. But this is actually one of the few times when we're discussing a show where I have not read the books. But I found that.
I mean, these books are like my champion guilty pleasure. Like I love all. I've read all of them. I'm not ashamed. Tell me your favorites, listeners.
But I found that to be rather off-putting. And one of the things I really liked about The Spanish Princess is that that seems to have completely faded away by the time we get here. But then when she's standing there and she sees kind of this dark figure in the woods who is clearly supposed to be like a devil or a ghost or a spirit of some kind, because there really isn't actually anybody there. I was like, wow, we did really come all the way back. First of all, we came all the way back, and second of all, you know, I actually really liked that because it sort of really spoke to me about the scene by the river
or the weird hovering death figure,
the weird hovering death figure, because it really sort of got me, it really sort of helped me understand Catherine of Aragorn's mental state at that moment, that she would visualize something like that, that the world is ending so much that her Catholicism brain basically conjures a devil, conjures death hovering above her. And I really liked that. And I would prefer more of, I think I would have preferred more of that than the there's magic in this river kind of stuff.
Yeah. There's a book that in the orders of all these books, the White Queen is based on the book, The White Queen. The mm-hmm. White Princess is based on a book called The White Princess. But there's a book that comes in the chronology before that book called Lady of the Rivers, which is about Jocasta and about how she's like a river witch or whatever. So I could take or leave that. But what I do think is interesting is The Spanish Princess is actually based on pieces of two different books called The Constant Princess. And I want to say, I think, The King's Curse.
Okay.
So I get what they're trying to do with that. They're trying to make the through line between the weird river magic to like, this is why Henry never has sons. Mm. Or why his sons don't survive, because the son that he will have with his third wife dies when he's like 16, 15, something like that. And his Henry Fitzroy, history spoiler, will die when he's 17.
I actually wondered why, like, I was like, there was a son, there was a bastard son who was mm-hmm. recognized. Like, I didn't, mm-hmm. that part of it. I totally missed that. If that is a thing in the other Tudor shows or you know, Wolf Hall or anything like that, I just totally missed that. Where did that come from?
That kid was real. He was a duke of a variety of things and like a 10-year-old sort of grand high admiral of the navy or something. I don't know. It was really weird, but he dies in his late teens.
Okay, so that's why he was never really considered. I was like, why is that never a thing? Well, I guess that's why that's never a thing. Anyway, since I don't know the Philip Gregory books, The King's Curse is, you said the King's Curse is like the other book that The Spanish Princess is based on. Are there more? Could this show?
There are so many of these books. The one people have probably heard of is the first one she wrote that got super popular, called The Other Boleyn Girl.
I've seen that movie.
That movie is not great.
No, it's not. It's a really weirdly cast movie. Like, Natalie Portman and Scarlett Johansson, like, I kind of get that they're taking roles that they don't usually get and that's what they're trying to do here, but it just doesn't work. Anyway,
There's the Other Boleyn Girl, which is about the Boleyn girls.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think there's a Jane Seymour book, but there's definitely one about, there's one that incorporates perspectives of Anne of Cleves and Catherine Howard and Anne Parr Catherine Parr, sorry. And there's one that's about Margaret Pohl actually gets some POVs in The King's Curse. And there's another one
there's so many. There's like a Mary Tudor book and an Elizabeth book about when she's a teenager, which was actually when I heard Starz was making sort of a young Elizabeth show. I was like, oh, they're going to do The Virgin's Lover or whatever it is. And they're not.
Oh.
But there's one about like Mary Queen of Scots, and there's so many.
Well, I guess that's sort of my question here is will there be, you know, one of the things about this so far is that, you know, we have the White Queen that goes to the White Princess and then goes to the Spanish Princess. And so each of those was a standalone that was sort of linked, but also felt like a standalone. And now we've had the Spanish Princess, which is two parts, you know, season one, season two. Will we then sort of bridge to another show, or is this kind of it?
I think the right answer is that they're kind of done.
Okay.
I wish they weren't, because okay, the next book in the, I don't, not in like the publishing chronology, but like the chronological order of like the story the books are telling, the next book is The Other Boleyn Girl. I also really, watching this, I was really sad that I don't think they're going to make any. I think they're going to make a lot more shows about like historical women. I don't know if it's going to come from the Philippa Gregory books. I don't think so, at least not right now. But there is a book. I'm really sad that they're not going to do Mary Tudor, because I would love, after watching The Spanish Princess and sort of the way that they depicted Mary and depicted Catherine's relationship with Mary and how she sort of rejected her and came back to her and how Mary's had to grow up in the midst of all of this, I would love to see what Emma Frost and Matthew Graham, I think is her co-writer, would do with Mary Tudor.
Yeah.
Who also, like her mother, had to fight for her throne.
Yeah. I mean, I would, you know, one of the things that, like, one of the things about, you know, finally sitting down and sort of watching The Spanish Princess, I think I had not really appreciated how good these series were until now. Yeah. Like, and it's partly just because, you know, life is short and peak TV is vast.
Yeah, it's true.
And this is not a show, and this is not a series that I haven't in any way been asked to cover in any sort of in any kind of, you know, facet.
It's also much more my lane than your lane.
Yes. But you know, I think now that I've sort of discovered this show and sort of gotten it at, like, I'm like, can there be more of these, please?
They're so good.
Yeah. So I'm sort of sorry to know that there might not be.
I know that that, like I said, Starz is working on like a lot of shows in this vein, but I don't know that they're going to do another one sort of from the same batch of source material, which I think is just a real shame, because I think too many people write this kind of programming off as like women's TV.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, oh, they just want to see like shirtless dudes and pretty dresses or whatever. But I truly feel like this little trio of series have had really, really sort of interesting things to say, really strong things to say. I think they have offered perspectives that like this particular lane of period drama TV does not touch very often. And I think more shows should be like that. I know that the Eleanor of Aquitaine series that Starz is doing is supposed to be based on a nonfiction and a fiction book by Alison Ware. Do you know who Alison Ware is?
No, I do not.
And she does a lot of sort of like writing about women in history during this time. I'm actually currently reading her fiction series about the six wives of Henry the Eighth, which are fiction, but are very much informed by the fact that she's done a lot of historical work around these women. They're really good. Consider that a book rec too, if you don't really like the magic stuff from Philippa Gregory. I can take or leave that part. But, you know, I feel like there's a real dearth of shows or any kind of properties that approached this kind of story in this kind of way, where the focus and the priority is a female POV, but that's treated with sort of the same weight as a male one would be. Like, it's not a female POV because this is a story about how much Catherine loves Henry, although that's like part of it. It's a story about who Catherine is as a woman, as a ruler, and how she really, you know, did a lot of remarkable things that she never gets credit for now. So I think, I don't know, I hope these other Starz series kind of continue this. I am sad that I don't think this one is going to be continuing right now. I hope that I'm wrong. I hope that I have to issue a correction in the future, because I would watch any of these that they made.
Yeah, I, as someone who really sort of you know, I really love history and I really love, like, you know, I'm dorky about that. And I love anything that tells me about parts of history that I don't know. And what I really hope is that even if Starz doesn't do more Philippa Gregory stuff, that they tackle these sort of sections, these blind spots that we get when we talk about history.
About history and women specifically, because yeah. It's almost always the women who are the blind spots.
Yeah. And part of the reason I think this section of Henry's life always gets skipped is because he doesn't do anything during this period that's all that interesting. Like, he doesn't, you know,
yeah, they were happy for like two decades. Yeah. They were, I mean, not for the entirety of it, but they were relatively happy. They married for love.
And they basically, you know, we start Henry VIII's story at the divorce because that's where he starts doing things that are interesting. And, you know, I think that, you know, there are periods that we sort of skip because it's not the men who are doing things that are interesting. And I would like more of delving into why those periods of history are interesting, especially if they are female focused. They're just also just like, what are we missing? Like, what parts of the story did we not get because we skipped it?
Yeah, I would watch all of that, as we know. I keep bringing up these shows because I love this stuff. But yeah, thanks for letting me have the dream for a little bit, guys. I'm sad to see it end, but I do feel like the show ended at a good place, mm-hmm. even if I know that like there's sadness coming and the piece of that ending is kind of a fiction, but that's okay. I'll take it.
And also because, you know, as you said, there is so much Anne Boleyn stuff out there. Like, this is, it basically ends at the period that everybody's covered. Like, yeah.
I do like that they put Anne Boleyn in just like a little bit, but did you notice they never actually say her name together?
Nope, they never do.
And the only reason you know it's her is because, well, everybody probably knows it's her because we know what happens after this part, but just she has the Anne's very famous bee necklace, and that is the only hint you get. They don't even tell you until this last episode that guy who's always sucking up to Henry is her dad.
And I actually was trying to figure out, like, about, I think, an episode or two before, if I'd missed which one of them. I was like, which one is Thomas Boleyn? I've totally missed it. Which one is Mary? I'm looking for Mary Boleyn. And the other thing is, I always picture Mary Boleyn as being a blonde. So I think I missed that was Mary Boleyn because she's dark haired in this version. So that actually also threw me. And I think that's probably deliberate because I think people do. And I think that's partly a casting thing that we all think of Mary Boleyn as being like a blonde. And so by not making her not blonde, it sort of hides her better. And I didn't I think I finally realized, oh, that's like, he's always saying, daughters, come over here. And we don't realize that those are Mary and Anne until, mm-hmm. yeah.
I mean, unless you happen to be a super nerd like me and every time they say Wiltshire, you're like, I know who that is. But that, yeah, I'm a big nerd.
It's okay.
That's all.
I like you because you're a nerd.
Aw, thanks. I like being a nerd. I think we've probably gone over a little bit because I could legit talk about this stuff for like so long. But anyway, that is The Spanish Princess. I hope everyone enjoyed that. If you have thoughts, if you are a reader of Philippa Gregory's novels and you would like to talk to me about that, please email us at televisions@wga.org. Or if you have thoughts about what other female-focused historical shows that people should be making and giving us. Anyway, I'm just going to tell Annie to tell everyone where you can find her on the internet, because I'll just keep talking if I don't.
Okay. You can find me at Annie Bundle on Twitter. You can find me at Miss Annie Bundle on Facebook. You can find my cat pictures at Annie Bundle on Instagram. Let's see. I am a staff writer at Elite Daily. I am a regular writer at televisions.org. You may have heard of it. And I also freelance around the web. So, you know, you just, if you want to read my stuff, basically just follow me on Twitter, because that's where I retweet all my bylines and it's the fastest way to find them all. So be my friend. Thanks.
Ta-da. I am Lacey MB on Twitter, LacyMB. And I also write a lot here at Televisions and a bunch of other places around the entertainment web. So come and be my friend. And you can see all of them. If you would like to see just my cat pictures, my kittens are on Instagram at Baker and Hammer. They are also currently sticking their paws under the door of the room in which I am recording. And it's very distracting. Televisions, that's the name of the thing that we do. We are a product of WETA. And if you like what we do, visit televisions.org and click on the donate button up top to help us keep doing it and support public media at the same time. 'Tis the season, guys. If you would like to follow the site and the pod on social media, we are at Telly_Visions on Twitter and Televisions Blog, all one word, on Facebook. We would love it if you'd leave us some ratings and reviews on the podcast app of your choice. And if you have thoughts about anything we have talked about this week or, you know, ever, shoot us an email at televisions@weta.org. We are in the planning stages for our year-end roundup. So if you want to make sure that we talk about a show that you liked this year, let us know what that show is. And I think that is everything that I need to blab about here at the end of this episode. But thank you, as always, for listening. We really appreciate it. We hope that everyone is having a joyous winter season and they are staying safe inside, socially distanced from other people, and wearing a mask when they go out. It's been a long, hard year. We all know it. But we just got to keep powering through it together. And, you know, we will try to entertain you with our blather while we do that. Thanks a lot for listening, everybody, and see you next week.